Beware, spoiler phobes! You have stumbled into a storm of spoilers. From brightest day to Sunday nights, no episode escapes our sight. Let those who want plot details light beware our power. The spoilers might. This podcast is split into two sections, the calm and the storm. In the first calm section, we're discussing the third episode of Lanterns on HBO, a television series that exists in the wider Warner Brothers DC universe. This season, the second storm section is reserved for informed speculation from things like the trailer for next episode. We've only seen what you have, because we're not ruining, we're enriching.
In brightest day,
in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power.
Hello, I'm Dave Gonzalez, and I was 15 when Master Yoda told me fear leads to anger leads to hate, and hate leads to suffering.
And I'm Neil Miller, and all of my meetings at Outback are extremely discreet, but they are done over a bloom and onion. And welcome back to A Storm of Spoilers. Before we get into it, of course, we have housekeeping. Next week, Lanterns. You could have guessed this. We're in the middle of the season. We're going to keep covering it. It's fun. And judging by how many emails we got this week, you guys are having fun too. If you would like to join the cavalcade of emails, stormofspoilers@gmail.com is how you can get in touch with us. Questions, corrections, theories, lore questions, stormy stuff, call me stuff, whatever you got. We love to hear all of it. You're doing great. You can also review us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Leave us a 5-star rating. Say whatever it is that's in your heart. We do have one this week, Dave. A review from someone named Not Nina Simone, which aren't we all? They say, how refreshing to have a podcast where the hosts not only say intelligent and interesting things, but unlike so many other podcasts, also avoid ear-piercing noises, talking over each other and arguing. Thank you. I am lucky to say that I don't listen to any of the podcasts that do ear piercing noises. I'm not sure.
See, I was going to say, but this is a, I'm sorry for talking over you in that moment. That's incredibly rude of me. But I do think this also stealth calls out Fighting in the War, my other podcast that starts each podcast with like a bike horn. And we have since the beginning. And I've lowered it in volume over the years because people are like, it automatically comes up. But I'm like listening to something else in my playlist. And all of a sudden, there's just a bike horn. And then I do argue with my co-hosts and talk over them. And, okay. Oh, but you know what? Not here.
Sure.
Not with you, Neil.
No bike horns here. You can also, if you would like to not only hear the No Loud Noise podcast, but watch the No Loud Noise podcast, you can get it over at youtube.com/@A Storm of Spoilers. Make sure you subscribe and like and comment and all of the things that help it go with the algorithm. And finally, because I know that if you're listening to this, you enjoy listening to Dave and I talk about movies and television and comic book stuff and video games. You can get so much more of that on Patreon, patreon.com/DaveAndNeil, DaSeveNeAndNeil. You can materially support us as we give you up to two more podcasts a week. The Pop Culture Adventure, where we talk about what we're watching and what we're playing and movies. This month, we're doing a Tim Curry retrospective on some of his lesser, I guess not lesser known, but just lesser thought of roles.
We're watching Ferngully, Neil.
Ferngully this week. And then if you subscribe at the highest level, the $10 small council level, you get in on our Dark Watch project, which is about halfway through season 3 at this point and is getting into what I assume are going to be answers any day now, but you can get in on that. You can also get in on our previous watch projects of Twin Peaks, The Leftovers, Hannibal, all kinds of good stuff in the Patreon, and it helps me pay off all of my debts. So that's that. That's the housekeeping that's fit to print. Dave, it is time to talk about this Lanterns episode named after a rap group.
That is right. It is season 1, episode 3, Outcast, spelt like the group with a capital K in the center of the word. It was written by Vanessa Baden Kelly, and it was directed by Stephen Williams. Neil, how do we know Stephen Williams?
He did so many great episodes of Lost. I mean, he also did like does all kinds of television, but we had this recurring gag, recurring talking point, not gag, where we joked that Stephen Williams was the go-to water scenes guy on Lost. I mean, he did so many other great things for that show, also produced by Damon Lindelof. But I was waiting for this episode for someone to go into the water, and sure enough, there's a whole sequence where John Stewart.
It happens. Yep. The score gets ticking. Yep. Someone gets in the water.
I'm just like, this is my comfort zone. But it's great to have Stephen Williams here because he's a fantastic director of television.
It worked really well for me. Let's talk about what happened. It's origin story time. We begin in an abandoned mall, the chosen location of the Intergalactic Guardians Green Lantern job fair. We follow 2016 John Stewart as he sits and waits for Laura Linney to return from the longest bathroom break of all time to begin his interview for the job of Hal Jordan's sidekick. As we learn about the Guardians and their recent loss of a member, we are transported through John's childhood and the path that led him to his Green Lantern candidacy. First, as a baby, his father was almost chosen by the ring, but he answered the fear question wrong. People who've been listening to our storm section, bing! The Guardians show up much later to give John's mom a massive diamond and encourage her to raise a son without fear. His parents raised him unconventionally, shooting apples from his head and leaving him to walk around alone in the city's most dangerous neighborhoods. John eventually joined the Marines and became a sniper until one day when a long and arduous off-books mission was spoiled by a drunken Hal Jordan, resulting in his dishonorable discharge. And eventually, he made it to art school, where he excelled at drawing buildings from memory. In the end, the Guardians give John the job after he rushes home to tell his parents. He finds Hal yucking it up at the dining room table. Instead of welcoming John to the team, though, Hal decides to be a dick about it. And off we go. What an episode for, I think, some new takes on Jon Stewart and some adaptation choices on Jon Stewart.
Sure.
But
new takes and adaptation choices that I still think feel in line with a lot of what I know of Jon Stewart's comic book vibes.
Yes, absolutely. Right. I want to return to, I think, a lot of our dorkier questions, but we'll like deal with this right up front. I've seen surprisingly little backlash to the narrative this one, this episode takes. The most backlash that I personally saw was a conversation I had with my partner about something that you asked much further down in our notes, but I'm gonna bring it up right here. Like, does raising like a good superhero with this mentality make them bad parents?
Sure.
I think, you know, shooting a gun off somebody's head is a fantastical way in a episode that also has a shape-shifting Laura Linney alien to really drive the point home. But also, I think the episode wants to be in conversation with the race of it all and sort of like the black people having to put their own name into the hat, as it essentially is summarized this episode. The sort of conflict I saw about that is it sort of could be, I guess, construed they have to adapt to a system that is already inconveniencing them, and why not tear the system down? But as we talk about in the storm all the time, we are very like, we are maybe like a third of the way through the season at this point. So I can imagine that that part will be addressed. What is this system that we're serving? And I think that the episode thematically addresses it here just by the Guardians and the way they sort of interact with humanity, the way they are like, hey, we hear we're causing some trauma, have a gigantic diamond, I think is a real good way to show that the structure isn't as great here. And we talked about last week that one of Jon Stewart's problems, we think, is that he is so dedicated to obeying the power structure. And here we sort of see the superhero version of doing what you've been told your destiny is. I know people may not want to hear from us, but we're two dudes without kids. Is that good parenting, Neil?
Well, I mean, it depends on whether you think the ends just justify the means in this one. And I do think that this show, you know, Jon Stewart as a comic book character and Jon Stewart as a television character, it's all him being, you know, the first black Green Lantern, obviously. Hal Jordan's the first human one to begin with. It is very fertile ground to kind of have this conversation about, like, what do you, how do you make yourself exceptional in a system that is already slanted against you? And I think that this show, the Green Lantern Corps has this sort of double layer to it, right? It's sort of slanted against humans in general. They view Earth itself to be a backwater, so much so that they did zero research into Earth to the point where even the all-powerful, all-knowing-ish guardians of the universe don't understand the racial politics of our planet, which I guess, fine. It's one thing to blame it on the ring, but I feel like the Guardians should have a slightly better handle on it. But, you know, I think just like they did with Watchmen, it's a really interesting narrative space to be in. And it's questions to that are worth asking. And I think, you know, obviously is feels very relevant to our real world and the sort of cultural politics of our American existence, specifically American existence most days. And I'm unlike you, I have seen some discourse on both sides, mostly because I log into Twitter more often. And I do think that this episode is further rolling into the people who are just like very disingenuously want to be like, this is woke. And it's like, all right, well, okay, just because they're telling a story about the black people and their struggle in America, that actually technically is woke. And if you don't
in the traditional state in the of traditional this, sense, the world.
And so if you don't say it with so much stink on it and say it as a pejorative, it is true. And I think that's fine because we're telling the story of Jon Stewart here. But I did see this one article in Salon where they were talking about how this sort of mirrors the black experience in America in the sense of like parents who sort of are very tough on their kid, basically like sports parents, which I think is, you know, I'm sure it's an issue for all kinds of different people in America because of our late stage capitalist system where having your kid grow up to be a professional athlete is a very good retirement plan if you can get it. But I do think, I don't know how, I mean, I do think that is one way to look at it in the sense that this, how is this any different, right? I mean, this is showing us some extreme things that they do, the parents. They are very tough on John. They sort of isolate him from his brothers. They shoot apples off of his head and drop him off in terrible neighborhoods. And so it's all, you know, in the end, it works out. So it's, are they bad parents? I think they're parents that want what most parents want, which is for their next generation to have it better than they did. And they are parents who are climbing a steeper hill than most, right? Like I think at one point, Jasmine Cephas Jones, who's playing John's mother, is really great in this episode, talks about Hal's sort of privilege of not having to have fear. And that is, I think, one assumption that you could make about Hal from her perspective. I feel like we haven't gotten Hal's origin, but most of his comic book origins are a little bit more tragic than that. But I don't think she's wrong in the sense that in order for John to become a Green Lantern, he's going to have to work harder than the white guy who can just drink his way through it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's a perfectly acceptable point because guess what? That's some real shit from, you know, in any industry in this world, in this real world. So the fact that it applies to the Green Lanterns as well isn't entirely surprising.
Inside the drama aspect of it, I really thought it was smart to have both parents. I think a little bit recontextualized from some of the assumptions we made in the first episode with the flashback with the dad, where it's like, here's an army dad that like wants his kid to be hard. And even when we got the idea that maybe he was rejecting the ring, like I get the semantics argument, and I'm glad we have it in terms of like, are you afraid is a thing that is unfair to like ask a black man. I also like that we talk about it as an imperfect system that the ring has, because being a Green Lantern is not about not having fear. It's about having the willpower to overcome fear. It's a courage. If you were to say, what does the green thing stand for? You would say either willpower or courage, you know, whatever you want to say. You would not say like absence of fear. That's not the definition.
It's also about being able to manifest things with your mind.
It's also about that. I mean, that's part of the creative part of him, but don't get me off the point. That's what makes the mom's part in this so great, is the mom is the Green Lantern. The mom is the one who has the willpower to overcome her fear. She talks the dad into it. She gets, you know, underneath the apple, even though she visibly doesn't want to at the end. She lies to her child and then tells her child that she lied to him like his entire life. Like, the mom is the one that is exhibiting the qualities that would make a Green Lantern, but also is a parent and is a real character. And just because you have those capabilities, like we see with Hal Jordan, doesn't mean you wield them in the responsible way. You just meet the bar of what is a Green Lantern. So I'm just very excited in having two characters that the way they go bad is they're trying to make like the choice, the greater choice for the world and the greatest choice for their son.
Sure.
And they're trying to do that. And she figures out a way to do that while also sort of like roping in. And I don't know if we're going to get more of what happens to the dad in the modern day, but at least for a little bit gives her husband some sort of purpose in a time that he's like lacking it. So in terms of a family drama, I really dig it.
Yeah.
In terms of like what's happening with the Green Lantern ring, I don't know if we still changed it because the ring still picks.
Sure.
Like, the imperfect system has not changed.
Well,
we've just added in the option that maybe we could put another one into the interview process.
Yeah. Well, I think before we get into that too far, I do want to settle this are they bad parents thing, because on the on the spectrum of Damon Lindelof bad dads, the bad dad barometer, if you will, I would say that these are pretty competent present parents who do not abandon their mission of raising John. I don't know how the other two kids turned out, but like, I think the show would lean into, is ultimately leaning into this being like good parenting, even despite what we're seeing. Right? Like, despite the minutia of it. I would say that ultimately John sort of lands in his interview on the side of like, yeah, my parents were tough and I was isolated from them a lot, but I'm glad they did it, kind of thing.
I definitely think we're supposed to be asking ourselves that question. I think the show leans heavily into the plot devices that would make this good parenting to distract from the fact there are several scenes of parents pointing a gun at their child. Like,
that's true.
I think
John as an adult is walking around, not necessarily with like resentment and, you know, issues with his parents so much as he is not admitting that he has some resentment issues toward like Hal Jordan.
This brings me back to my Yoda quote, because what are the consequences of raising your child without fear? Like, fear exists. So let's play along with your presupposition and say they are good parents. They kept this child alive without the natural thing of fear, which would help him keep himself alive if he wasn't being parented. If you have a fearless soft boy at 5 years old who's told he's going to be a Green Lantern, he shouldn't have fear, he's already getting the gunshots, that kid touches the stove. Like, that's what, you know, we're supposed to be taught is supposed to trigger a fear response. So they kept him alive despite the fact that there's nothing in him to self-preserve. We saw that when he was on his mission. He's more interested in getting the mission done than he is in like anything about himself. Mm-hmm. The most he's taken control of his life is he's a vegan and he doesn't drink. But that's the most he's been capable of taking control of his life this entire time. So the parents put him on a very strict tract and got him to that place, to that destination. But what they stripped him of is that fear leads to anger and anger leads to hate. He can't hate his parents. He can't hate Hal Jordan. Is this like a chain? Like also what you're talking about could be a sociopath. Did you create a sociopath?
Well, you know, listen, I would say he's more likely to become a sociopathic villain if they don't give him the job at the end.
I mean, I guess that's true. And this is another episode where at the end of the episode, I'm like, I wonder if Hal was killed by John in 2026. Mm-hmm. They keep leading to like that being a possibility. At this point, I can't understand why this episode has done a good job to be like Hal Jordan by just running around being Hal Jordan, very specifically, fuck this family.
Sure.
Just like,
sure.
He didn't know it. It was just that that's the byproduct of being a privileged white man in the world.
Sure.
Is he very specifically, fuck this family. Well, twice, and I guess at least
I do think that this, you know, the show is leading us down a path where we are supposed to be have antennas up for the conflict between John and Hal Jordan. But I think that is also kind of a distraction away from maybe a larger story that it's going to try and tell about space cops and whether John's commitment to adhering to the chain of command is a positive or ultimately something he's going to have to depart from when it comes to becoming a Green Lantern.
I can't wait for Superman/Clark and John Stewart to get together and talk about nature versus nurture. Because Clark's going to be like, well, my bio parents wanted me to make a harem out of Earth and dominate it. But my human parents were a lot more like yours. And John Stewart's like, tell me about your white human parents and how they were a lot more like mine.
Although can't it is wait. Interesting that both of those stories so far, featured stories here in the James Gunn DCU, are leaning very heavily into that it is about your nature. That it's about the nurture. And it's about how your race can overcome sort of the natural starting point, I guess, for both Superman and John Stewart.
Yeah, they're going to have a weird conversation. Last week, we started off with the letters we got because we were like, send more letters. You guys answered. So before we get deeper into the specifics of what this episode, I think, entails, we're going to read some of your ravens. This one is from Gary in New Jersey. I very much enjoyed the pod and I'm stoked you're covering Lanterns. As a comic enjoyer and Green Lantern fan, I think the show is great. You could definitely see Tom King's fingerprints on the story, dialogue, and characterizations. The DCU should be doing more of this going forward, prestige shows as opposed to movies. Also, you guys should do a live podcast in New York Comic Con next month. I agree with all that except the last one. I just don't think that's possible.
Sure. You know, no money. Sorry.
Dead. No money. I do try to take like a October vacation, but I gotta go to the other coast this sure. year. And not go to New York Comic Con, sure. Unfortunately.
I gotta save my money to drive to the grocery store. New York is too far. But I also agree with the first part of Gary's email that I think that having Tom King, who's a prolific comic writer, creator, in the writer's room is something that is helping this show be better than it could have been, right? Like that this is an upgrade for this show. And I think that not only do I agree that the DCU should not stray away too far from doing prestige TV, especially because I also enjoyed Peacemaker, I think that having the comic writers involved is something that will help them. I don't feel like that's something that happens in the MCU these days. I mean, they have like the not brain trust.
Yeah.
But this is more of a like, we have our TV crew, you know, Damon Lindelof and who's the other guy?
Chris the Ozark guy.
Yeah, the Ozark guy. And we'll bring in our comic book ringer in Tom King as well. I think that's a really good combo. And keeping that creative group kind of small allows them to make this show feel sort of unlike anything else. And of course, they still have the larger universe to think about. But I don't, so far, everything they've indicated and everything we've seen from this show is that it isn't feeling any kind of pressure to serve the larger universe yet, other than just introducing the Lanterns as a concept.
Since we last talked, they announced the Gorilla Grodd show. Have you heard about this?
Yes. In fact, I think one of our emails mentioned it. Pat mentions it at one point, but I'm excited because it's like the American Vandal guys, right?
Yeah, it's the American Vandal guys doing a true crime documentary about whatever Gorilla Grodd's in prison for.
Sure.
That sounds
fun to me.
Yes. Again, if it's a TV flavored project, do it on TV. If it's a movie size thing, like Man of Tomorrow should absolutely be a movie.
Sure.
And I'm glad they're having all the like things, you know, thrown into it. But yeah, if they have a specific genre riff, I can't wait. I will watch that Gorilla Grodd show.
You know, I feel like we've mentioned this multiple times over the course of the last couple of weeks, which is one of the heights of the sort of creative respect of the MCU was the era when they were like, all right, genre template, do it, but, you know, make it a Captain America movie. This seems to be a good path for the DC Universe's TV as well, where it's like, all right, we're going to do our true crime mockumentary, and we're going to do our true detective show, and we're going to make things that feel familiar as television, but also are just set in this world with these characters. And I think that that is a very effective way to differentiate what you're doing on television to, you know, your big sort of tentpole movie stuff.
If we want to talk about television shows being woke, the last amazing Gorilla Grodd appearance that I remember talking to other people about who actually weren't watching the show was on DC TV's Legends of Tomorrow, where Gorilla Grodd went back in time to try to kill Obama when Obama was in college. It was so great.
Sure.
This next question comes from Thomas, or this next Raven comes from Thomas. It's not just a question. It is other things. Decided to re-listen to the Lost Pod since I finished the show and hadn't listened to any of the Storm sections. And it turned out to be perfect timing since I'm also really digging Lanterns. Neil, that's the Storm, our Lost rewatch we did during the pandemic.
In this very feed.
People need to know. In this very feed, just scroll back a little bit. I found it very funny that Jack was originally supposed to die in the Lost pilot, and now that the fate has been transposed to Hal, Lindelof must have kept that one in a chamber for a while. And here's a non-Storm Lantern theory. There's been some talk going around that there's more than one Manhunter in the town, and that's possibly the whole town are Manhunters. That's probably not the case, just based off the fact the sheriff is still the sheriff in 2026, and the town is still there. I would say we're still dealing with a handful at most. My guess is the Manhunter situation gets cleared up around the halfway point, and then we deal with the possibly Stormy, but I think I talked about it in the column in terms of just like, look at these five dudes, because we're going to talk about it later. Different colored lanterns at the end of the season. Another name for you to investigate in the Storm, and I'm going to skip it because we should do that in the Storm.
Oh, right.
But yes, I do think that it is possible that we have a huge pivot in the half of the episode.
Sure.
I don't know if it's going to be the Manhunters, though, which is something that I think we're going to have to talk about in the Storm. But when we're talking about Lost, I think the Lindelof crowd can feel a pivot coming. Mm-hmm. We are being told a very nonlinear story that is dealing with questions that we have, but not dealing with the big dun 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 at the end of episode one, which is a dead Hal Jordan. We're spending lots of time doing stuff, not going back to 2026. And so I do think we're going to have to pivot at some point to what is happening in 2026. But that would be my thought. They're thinking we're going to pivot to something more galactic, maybe in 2026. And maybe that's why the, you know, compound is blown up in 2026, because we're going to go big for the second half of the season. If you had to guess here in the calm, is there a mid-season pivot point, and what do you think it's pivoting from generally?
I mean, I think there's a mid-season reveal coming. I don't know if I agree that we will wrap up the Manhunter stuff mid-season. I think that the Manhunter part of the Green Lantern lore is significant enough that they'll want to keep playing that out. I do think that, you know, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but based on the next week's On trailer, we're going to get back to the galactic Sinestro of it all, and trying to figure out what his interest in Jon Stewart is. So I think we're going to be dealing a lot with like 2016, and maybe we see whatever incident blows up the Bacon compound mid season. And then, you know, I think we don't necessarily have to go all the way to 2026. We could spend time just destroying this town for several episodes. So that could be fun too. But
They built it. Why not just blow it all up?
Yeah. The thing I agree most with is that we are headed for talk of other kinds of lanterns sooner rather than later. Because, again, there's a reason why they didn't call the show Green Lantern.
Here is a Raven from Pat once again, responding to something you just said and something I said last week. Thanks for the thoughtful consideration of my emails and Dave extending me some grace, believing that my proposal suggesting that maybe Bald Anton, I think he was credited as Anton, but maybe I'm hallucinating, and his team were Manhunters as a way of distracting from the real theory that they are either Red Lanterns or will become Red Lanterns. No, I'm all in on them being Manhunters. Pat's like, no, I said what I said. For me, the fact that four of them at the Rushville football game were detected by the Macon installed detectors, but Waylon was not, suggests to me that Waylon was a recruit of the Manhunters, but not a literal Manhunter like the other four. Manhunters recruiting folk into the Manhunter ideology is a common thing in the comics. Retconning the occasional, originally unconnected to the GL lore, human vigilante with the name Manhunter into the unwitting pawn of space androids. My gut says that if Atrocitus and the lead lanterns and the Red Lanterns were there to get at the hidden Manhunter, their rage would not afford them the subtlety of what is currently going on. Alrighty, the Lord bombed me. I can see things playing out how you describe, though. I just think it's fun to have competing theories. Which space religion is right, or words to that effect? I will enjoy being proven wrong just a smidge less than if I am proven right, since this show is so much more fulfilling than when I heard about it in the works, and I am here for anything. And then he asked about the people versus Gorilla Grodd. We've talked about it.
Here's my question.
That's a lot of layers. Yeah.
Do you think that this show is headed in a direction of a witch lantern religion is right question?
Maybe, right. But I think the reveal is that that's sort of a universe-wide thing.
Yeah,
like that, you know,
like if you're climbing into the long-term planning part of Damon Lindelof's brain, do you think that's where he wants to go, either later in this season or in like a second season and beyond?
I would think a second season would be something similar to a partner riff. We do have two existing Green Lanterns. I don't know if they're going to have like Nathan Fillion do what, but like we also have Kyle, an entire other Green Lantern that we're not using, even though I think his origin is he's the artist, whereas Jon Stewart is an architect, and they've sort of switched that out. All I'm saying is that once we realize the lanterns are in this big, you know, wider universe, and we pass Jon over to Man of Tomorrow that we know he's appearing in, then how do you reground that back at an HBO level? I think you still do True Detective. You just take a, you know, sliver from their book and pivot to a different type of story. You know, maybe we're
Colin Farrell and his kid.
Yeah, call us. Yes. Just directly do season two. We're doing a Bardo play.
An intergalactic space sex cult.
That's how they dig back in and bring Kyle Chandler back. Season two is all about things that take a place with Kyle Chandler's character between 2016 and 2026. They're just like, hey, season two, the season in between stuff. Like, they could do something like that. I am interested to see if they are willing to go, I think, that weird. Because this Raven from Steven also clarifies, I appreciate your insights and knowledge on Lanterns and previous shows. I normally do not like spoilers, but given the show isn't based on a specific known story, I enjoy listening to your speculation, which helps fuel my thoughts. The idea that aliens that capture John are really Atrocitus and the other survivors of Sector 666 is wild, but I really hope you are correct. Live action Red Lanterns would be awesome to see, especially if they keep their way of using their powers from the comics. Essentially, they vomit power beams.
Awesome.
If we get Red Lanterns, that makes me hopeful we will get other lanterns as well. A live action Saint Walker would be epic. What lantern color or character are you most excited to see in live action? So the Red Lanterns just like vomit red plasma. That's their main usage of their power. They don't like create anything as much. So I would say that if this is a Lanterns that gets wide, that's something you have to save towards the end of the show, because I do think, like you're saying, you could blow up that compound for as many episodes as you want, but it's one as soon as like Anton turns into a giant new type of alien we haven't seen and starts vomiting red on people, we're in like a different game. So like, I don't think we're going to get more Lanterns until we wrap up the Manhunters necessarily, or maybe we wrap up the idea that there are other Lanterns and then close out the Manhunters, but we don't expand on like Red Lanterns and sure. Pat ends up being right. There's not a lot we could say in the calm, I think, but
I do have an answer to the final question, which Lantern core would I like to see. It is the Star Sapphire core.
Okay,
their power is love, and they're a bunch of hot ladies from all over the galaxy. And I'll be honest, I'm okay with that. I'd like to see it. We still haven't seen the name of Ferris in this show yet, but I do believe Carol Ferris becomes a member of the Star Sapphire core at some point in the comics. So, let's bring the love with violet light.
Yeah. Season two is just Hal Jordan, Carol Ferris, 2016 to 2026.
Sure. And John Stewart needs a girlfriend, I guess. He finally figures out that he needs love in his life instead of just duty and honor and not being afraid of shit.
I mean, mine's the Green Lantern chip, or if we get Red Lantern, the Red Lantern Dex star, the cat, the cat that's so angry has embraced the cosmic power of hate. I think that's pretty funny. Chip, I gotta just keep asking for one thing, and then the show will give it to me if I am willfully resolute, like John Stewart's parents. I want the space squirrel.
Sure,
on space screen. Squirrel. Thank you.
Yep. Do you think there's any chance that the show would do the ultraviolet lanterns? I know this is a John Stewart thing. The ultraviolet lanterns are, unlike the Green Lantern Corps, they don't offer rings that give users the power of ring tattoos that they are stuck with, and that they are all about hidden negative feelings, which I mean, feels somewhat relevant to everything we saw in this episode, which is, does John harbor hidden negative feelings toward anybody, parents, Hal, the Guardians, everybody?
That would be a fun one. I think that's way too far for season one, unless they're going to like end with like, and there are other colors, and we get like a panning shot. But that's like not how.
Depends on how interesting that's not the show how these shows is end. In that. I would love for this, to go back to one of the previous emails where it's like, do we think there's a pivot coming mid-season, and is the pivot, oh my God, the Green Lanterns aren't the only ones? That'd be kind of fun. But that feels very ambitious for this particular show. So we'll see.
From Phelan, love the episode. It's always satisfying when a theory lands right on target. Yay! John's dad had the fear in him, and John's the Tiger Woods of superheroes. I mentioned before that the comic version of Hal is the Captain Kirk of the Lantern Corps. Personally, I'm digging Kyle Chandler's performance, but in a recent interview, veteran comic writer Grant Morrison said this is not his Hal and compared this portrayal to Dr. McCoy. Honestly, he's not totally wrong. I'm not as critical as he, but once you notice it, it's hard not to see bones in Kyle's Hal. I'm curious what your feelings are on that comparison. Let's stop there and then get to the second part of his letter in another part. But I like this, but I think what this episode highlights is just how much John and Hal are not talking to each other about what their backstories and motivations are. So I think we're getting a Kyle Chandler bones as like, that's how they're playing it. Sure. But it's very much how it's playing it from a situation where he's super cocky. And also there's constantly something else going on.
Right.
I think we're going to get more of a peek into what's going on with Hal. And I'm wondering if that peek is going to double down on this portrayal of like a cantankerous asshole who's making international deals at the strip club, or if it's going to deepen that. And that's just how the public understands who Hal Jordan is and Hal Jordan's actually dealing with something else.
Yeah. Or if at some point, like many a Damon Lindelof character before him, we're going to be forced to recontextualize Hal Jordan and understand that, you know, maybe he's not just a cantankerous superhero. Maybe he, maybe there's something else driving him, some sort of deep trauma that is driving him to be like this and to be sort of an outcast of his own making in some ways, and to something that drives his rebellious spirit toward his bosses and whatnot.
Yeah. At some point, if John Stewart ever yells at Hal Jordan, which is unlikely because he fear leads to anger and he can't do any fear. He's going to be like, they downloaded a genocide into your head. And Hal Jordan's going to be like, oh yeah, one genocide? Let me tell you the story of Hal Jordan. And just be like, I thought I was hot shit saving, you know, all the Russians and dropping them off. And then,
and the credits are going to hit and we're going to be like, all right, well, at least we know why he drinks now.
Yeah, and then makes sense. I would also be drinking. And then Phelan's email continues. I've got my sister and her old man joining us for lanterns. This is a big deal for us because it's been a long while since we all came together at my house for HBO Sunday nights.
Love
we
it.
Binged the first two episodes, and she had some questions about the lore as we went. So how did Hal get the ring? The previous owner died, and the ring selected Hal as his replacement. So when does John get the ring? When Hal dies, John will take over as Green Lantern. She stops for a second and says, so it's like the Santa Claus? Yeah, I said. Apparently, it's exactly like the Santa Claus. You put on the suit and you're the big guy, which I
it's
love
not
this
unlike
story.
The Santa Claus.
I think that this is a key question we are supposed to have about how the ring operates. And that is going to lead us into whatever's happening in 2026, because we know in 2026, the ring's gone. It's very much supposed to go to John as we understand it in 2016, but it looks like John is looking for the ring and it is not on Hal Jordan, which would imply that the ring still went on its system and went and found somebody else, and the Guardians can't control the ring passing on.
Sure.
Which is interesting.
Or, like, you know, again, the ring system, as the Guardians sort of indicate, as Laura Linney's Guardian indicates in this episode, it works on other planets because other planets aren't shitholes. Like,
right. But the fact that they have a backup, and the fact that while they're sort of interviewing him, they have him manifest a watch with a ring, means that at any point the Guardians could bestow a ring upon John Stewart if they wanted to.
Yeah,
they
I mean,
new Green Lantern ring.
Bloop. I was doing some light researching on comic lore this week of the lanterns. And, you know, eventually there's like five or six human lanterns.
Yeah.
So, you know, the whole like one per sector thing is a rule that they could throw out very quickly if they wanted to. And I think by the time we get to the events of Superman, we probably have at least two.
But it does also mean that that is a choice they've been doing that we know isn't true now on the show. Mm-hmm. And they're like, rings are imperfect, but also, like, you can't have one until Hal dies. That's the Guardian's decision to do this. So, like, we're going to replace Hal Jordan. They're like, and we would like it to be you. Did they just...
Or there's some reason why they feel either beholden to Hal Jordan or fearful of Hal Jordan. There's something that nobody's telling us about the relationship between the Guardians and Hal Jordan, in the sense that why would... If they think he sucks at his job, which they've indicated they do, why don't they just replace him, right? It's funny because I was watching a video and they corrected the record on which Pope was in the picture of...
I think that was Screen Crush.
Yeah, good, the Screen Crush. Good job, Screen Crush. Shout out Ryan Airy and his Japanese snack boxes. but it was that Pope, it's Pope Benedict specifically, and Pope Benedict is the only Pope to have ever resigned. So I guess this means that we're getting to a point where maybe Hal Jordan could quit, which I think could be a fun little piece of like production design lore building, or it could be a red herring. I think it's more likely that the Guardians want to replace Hal, but there's something stopping them. And I think that has a lot to do with what Hal was doing when he stopped downloading his memory into the ring, how Hal participated in the defeat of Sinestro, etc. So I think that it's more of a, are they, is it because they're very loyal to him for saving 11 out of the 12 Guardians, or is it because they are afraid of what Hal could do? Like, has he shown himself to be a more powerful Lantern than they expected? Because humans, as we know, very chaotic and unpredictable species.
Mm-hmm. I've seen lots of stories where nobody accounts for the fact that it's going to be a human, and you know, it's just the Last Starfighter situation. Mm-hmm. Very, very lightly, but you get what I mean if you've seen The Last Starfighter. And also, congratulations. Make sure to go visit the doctor. You're old. at the beginning of this episode, it starts with Jump, and we loop back to it. Mm-hmm. But when it did start this way, I thought back to last week's episode that was called Trust Fall, and how we talked about they changed it. He was going to wake up John Stewart, like, hanging over the waterfall and be like, you know, jump to learn how to fly. And I realize now that they probably wrote that episode, named it Trust Fall, and like, this is great, and then got this episode and they're like, this episode starts the exact same way except he really jumps this time.
This one actually has, like, a trust fall in it.
Yeah, they're like, okay, let's go back and change the beginning of episode two. And they're like, oh, I already called it Trust Fall. So that makes a lot more sense to me. I'm glad we don't have the repeated jump / fall imagery, because I'm not sure we need it. Mm-hmm. It, especially with episode one starting with sort of like the car going off the cliff. I get it. Jon Stewart's not going to hit the ground. I believe you. He's not going to hit the ground. Maybe they're setting me up for a fall there myself. Neil, I think I picked the most True Detective thing about this episode. Mm-hmm. Do you want to disagree with me, or can we say it strongly as a show?
I'm fully in support of this, because this works really well. And I think, you know, this is, I don't know, probably more than True Detective gave us for any of their stories, as far as like giving us a backstory to the relationship.
Yep. It's our detectives probably hate each other with reason. I get why these two don't like each other, and I'm excited to figure out if we're going to explore that or if it's just going to make them incapable of working together until they absolutely need to.
At the moment, I think it is at the very least a good distraction for the audience to be sitting there questioning whether or not John is the one who shot Hal Jordan in 2026.
Yeah.
Because, you know, would you blame him at this point?
Guy messed with his life. We got two new ring manifestations. We got John Stewart Sr.'s watch assembled bit by bit. Very cool. And the bomb shelter bubble, along with some sort of giant exploding method of Green Lanterning.
Sure.
I've seen some people say that's like the sonic boom of like the air bubble when he pushes, but I don't know if it would cause that much devastation or not. Either sure. way, that was Hal Jordan. Bubbles up our gray wolf and then devastates the environment around it.
Yeah, which also sticks to, you know, I think we talked about this last week, the idea that the Green Ring is not, the Green Lantern Ring is not to be used for lethal intent. So we still, right. even though we see Hal do allegedly drunkenly something very destructive here, he very specifically doesn't kill anyone.
It does make more sense why everybody's very concerned about at the beginning of Superman that Superman's running around interfering in international politics mm-hmm. because you got a Hal Jordan running around just being like, oh yeah, whoops. And then he gets John Stewart dishonorably
flew
discharged.
Over to Russia and got this terrorist. Who, you know, apparently, according to the comic lore, is associated with Lex Luthor. So we'll see if that ever comes, it becomes a bigger deal.
Well, Neil, I want to talk more about this episode, but I want to talk about what might be happening later on in the season because of the consequences of this episode, which I think means we're almost ready for the storm. Is there anything else you want to talk about before we head there?
No. I would say my final calm thoughts are I'm into what they're doing. I also think that the show has done a really good job of continuing to conserve its visual effects budget, right? Like mm-hmm. we are seeing some cool lantern stuff here and there, but it's all like at a distance. It's a little confusing. I would say the most complicated effect in this episode is the watch, which is a very yeah. small effect, but I also like the details of it where he puts it together as a working watch with all the little pieces instead of just manifesting a watch hole. So I think very smart in the way that they're deploying their television budget so far. And I am continue to be hopeful that that means the bigger things are awaiting us in the back half of the season.
I can't wait for the battle that we get to see both Hal Jordan and John Stewart making constructs, because I think we're going to learn Hal Jordan has some pretty basic ass bitch, big giant mallet constructs. And John Stewart's going to be making some green art mm-hmm. To fight his battles with. So can't wait for that to happen. Lanterns, three good episodes out of three. Let's talk about where they might be going in the storm.
That's why my gut always told me that crash is no accident. When it says there's a shitstorm en route, I make sure there's a lookout to tell me when it's fucking coming.
All right, we're back in the storm. I didn't have much to add this week to my, Red Lantern theory, but I am very happy that everybody wrote in. The second I was like, this is obviously what's happening, being mm-hmm. like, A, this is not. B, that's a crazy thing to say. I found your show because you're crazy. Love that. So welcome to the storm, people.
What crazy shit can we say this week, Dave?
Yeah, this is where the crazy shit goes on. I want to go back to somebody was talking about how big could like the actual lanterns go. Which is, they were talking about like red, yellow. Would it be cool to see some blue, orange? Black Lantern would be wild, but I don't think that's happening. The Black Lantern would be something I think that is introduced as like the big bad of an entire season. I don't think we're building that many lanterns. Mm-hmm. I do think this show, by having the title Lanterns, could get there in like a sure. season and a half if it wants.
We're still easing the audience, the non-comic book nerd audience, into the basic concept, which is you've heard of Green Lantern, but did you know that there are other colors?
Yeah. I think it'd be great. I think you could build entire seasons around the theme of whatever things you're going to do. Like the orange, you know, the avarice, the greed, like that is what if not a capitalism metaphor waiting to happen.
Sure.
And like, I feel like you could do that sorts of stuff. All right, let's get more into manhuntering. This is from that same email. Another name for you to investigate in the storm, especially when it comes to mysterious Macon benefactor, is Hector Hammond, particularly the Absolute Universe version, who is another super rich guy and a lantern villain. They haven't set him up at all, and I think it's more likely we're sticking with red and yellow lanterns plus the manhunters, but it's the mystery we know the least about right now, and he's a rich guy. I am not familiar with the Absolute Universe version, but I looked it up. Could be. He's just a rich guy.
Sure.
DC Universe does like its rich guys.
It does, yeah. I mean, rich guys causing problems for superheroes is sort of a thing. I mean, unless you're talking about Batman, who's just a rich guy who is a vigilante and maybe a fascist sometimes.
Right. I do like the idea that in every, you know, like DC alien story, there's a rich guy who hates aliens. I feel like that's just a fun trope that we've been living with.
We haven't really been even given too many hints. We know Gotham exists, obviously, and they've mentioned Gotham. We haven't given any sort of idea of what Batman is like in this. But if Batman also is a rich guy who's a little preoccupied with aliens coming to Earth, that feels like something they wouldn't want to do so readily after the Snyderverse was basically built around that, which is like, what if Batman hated Superman because he was an immigrant?
Yeah, if you're building a DC superhero villain or DC supervillain, like rich guy who hates aliens is enough. You only need like one other thing, and like the making his other thing is cowboy. I think that's like just enough. Lex's thing is stealth real estate. Like all the Superman movies, Lex is like the Gene Hackman version wants to claim more land. The Kevin Spacey version wants to make more land. The newest Superman version, the Nicholas Holt version, is like obsessed with pocket universe merging. It's like the dude is a real estate guy.
Palestine for himself. I mean, part of what's
part of called? Whatever country. Don't worry about it.
Jamirpur.
I'm sure it'll come back around. Doesn't matter. I don't think it matters, but maybe it does. In which case, I apologize. but yeah, the fact that when Batman comes around, if they want, I don't know how
Jarmanpur
quick.
Sorry, it came to me.
I don't know how quickly after Robert Pattinson's Batman 2 we're going to get a Batman, but if they get a Batman, it could just be rich guy who is also Batman. Sure. Rich guy hates alien, also Batman. Like that's just enough of a flavor that I know who that character is. I think they'll probably make it more about the family, but we'll see. We'll get to Batman when we get there. The other Storm email we have is also about manhunters and who is doing what over in Nebraska. Wing2J on Zoe Macon. I don't think she's the manhunter. I think she's in the Proto Sinestro Corps. In scenes in both episodes, there was very bright pops of yellow in the set dressing. Ooh, in the bar of episode one, she's playing with yellow sugar packets. In the diner of episode two, she's surrounded by bright yellow mustard bottles. Also in that diner scene, she asked John, "How's your white man?" which is echoed later in the episode by Sinestro, who asks Hal, "How's your black man?"
I like this theory. I think it's fun. I think it's more fun than her being, well, I guess, could she be both? I mean, I do think that there's more to Sinestro's involvement than just being a, you know, a backstory chess piece that Hal goes and talks to every once in a while. I think that maybe he has something to do with what's happening on Earth. That's entirely possible. So her being an agent of him is... I like the color theory, Reed. That's fun. So I think her being an agent of Sinestro is kind of cool. And if this show, we still don't know, right? And I think maybe next week, based on the trailer, we get a little bit more information on this, where we are in Sinestro's journey. Has he already become a Yellow Lantern and he tried his overtaking the Guardians and only got one of them type of deal? Or are we still, is that still yet to come? And is that part of the story they want to tell? So I think all options are interesting. I think the show building toward Sinestro getting out and becoming a Yellow Lantern goes with a lot of the stuff we're starting to expect, which is the show is sort of starting the audience with the drip, drip, drip of here's how the lantern thing works before just absolutely unleashing how many lanterns there are, like types of lanterns, you know?
Yeah, I think it's a good read. Again, I do like the color theory. I also am getting the feeling like from the 2016 stuff that they know Hey. No, I think that's right. I don't think anybody knows that there are yellow lanterns anywhere. I think that's still part of a secret, sure, if I were to guess.
His Wikipedia page only says that Sinestro did a coup and failed.
Right. Did a coup, failed, killed one of the Guardians in some sort of space prison. Mm-hmm. I do think at some point he's going to be... Well, and that's, I think, the question about Hal coming to, like, talk to Sinestro and what we're going to be dealing with next week is, like, Hal Jordan, like, you know, immediately was like, hey, this is a bad idea. Turns on his, like, father figure, like, on his mentor.
Mm-hmm.
Oops, sorry. And then, like, puts him in jail. Why is he coming to visit him? Why is he still asking him for advice? He must not have turned on him that hard,
mm-hmm,
in order for him to still be like a valuable source of information. So I get the feeling that both Sinestro and the Manhunter mystery are connected in the sense that they prove that the Guardians have no idea what the hell's going on. Mm-hmm. They're trying to make like an orderly universe. They have rings that are making stuff up. You can wield a ring and have fear in your heart. It's just hidden. That's what the Sinestro Corps are, essentially, is it's a Green Lantern that reveals there's been fear in them all the time, which in theory is sort of like John Stewart's dad or John Stewart's mom. So I think we're building, because we're focusing so much on fear and what it takes to make a lantern in these first three episodes, mm-hmm, I do think we're building to the reveal that the yellow lanterns exist. If they exist already, would be interesting, because she is the least fearful character outside of the colors, I think, mm-hmm, in terms of on this show.
Sure.
She does not give a shit about what's happening.
Yeah, she slept around on her husband and then apparently told him.
Just told him.
That is some yellow lantern behavior.
So, Neil, what do you think we're going to deal with next week, having watched the episode 4 teaser?
I mean,
I know there's the shot of the car blowing up, which we've seen in the previous trailer, which has like this red laser light that comes down from the sky. I referenced that, I think, when I was making my case for the Red Lanterns, but this is too early. Episode 4 is too early for that. So I mean, it does look like there's some sort of attack, I would assume.
But you never know. I mean, I do think that obviously we're going to get back to Hal and Sinestro. And it does seem like we're going to get closer to, you know, the part of the show where it's going to reveal a turn, right? Like, I feel like the pivot is coming, and the pivot could be right here in this episode. And if that's the pivot, like, oh, there are other types of lanterns, that gives him a lot of runway, and that's kind of fun. I think traditional wisdom would say that that's a little too ambitious for this show, especially given that, you know, the foundation here is that the creators of the show understand that people are aware, you know, normies, people who don't read comic books obsessively and probably only saw the Ryan Reynolds movie, if that, they're aware that Green Lanterns are a thing, but this show does seem to be taking its time and very patiently establishing what that means, right? Like, we haven't seen them do any like crazy constructs yet. But then I'm reminded of how they treated the lanterns in Superman, which is Guy Gardner just comes out swinging with all kinds of crazy constructs and is like,
yeah,
you know, poking a kaiju in the eye with a weird like needle thing that he manifests. So I think that this show could also take a really hard turn as well halfway through, where it's like, all right, the true detective interpersonal journey continues, but we're going to let the cosmic elements really just take off here. And I think that'd be kind of fun. That would be a way for the show to feel unexpected halfway through its season, rather than continuing to sort of slow roll toward that. So I think, just given all the breadcrumbs we have now, I think things could escalate pretty significantly next week.
I think things will escalate at the end of next week's episode. I do hope we spend a little bit of time in the front half dealing with whatever went down with Sinestro and Hal beyond just the, I saw it on the news, or I read the Wikipedia page version that we've been getting, or the, I listened to a podcast about lanterns and they told me what was in the comics version that you've been getting, listener. Like, I think it'd be fun for the show to define that a little bit more, because it is such a bad dad show at its core. This is Hal's bad dad, you know. And in addition, I would say that not only is Sinestro Hal's bad dad, but Hal also had a bad dad in the comics. So I can't wait to see which one they're choosing, if they choose to connect the two. If when Hal talks about, you know, like losing a family member in the 80s being the thing that sort of like made him fearless, he was talking about his dad, but maybe once you like lose an ideological argument with your Green Lantern father, it changes who you are as a person. I hope that we spend some time in 2006 with Hal and Sinestro, which is my guess for when some of this stuff started going down, leading up to the Guardians dying, which seems to happen like 6 to 8 months before Jordan and Hal team up, is when I think Sinestro killed the Guardian and finally went to jail.
Sure.
So in between 2006 and 2016, Sinestro and Hal are out doing their own stuff. And I can't wait to figure out what that relationship was like. And I hope we get to see it, because it could be a very fun cutaway, but I also think it's a good excuse for some well-written scenes that gives us all that context while they're doing the Hannibal Lecter up in space prison. So promise. There's promise, I think, for next week's episode.
Yeah. I mean, I think, and also, like I said, they've been doing a good job of conserving VFX budget. So we'll see. We'll see where they want to spend it.
I haven't been able to find my Green Lantern from the 2011 film. I got a promotional Green Lantern ring. Sorry, I wish I had a Green Lantern. It's just the ring. But I guess like I'm going to find it by the finale episode. That's just my luck with our YouTube series. But I'm going to look for it. And also, if we are ever right about Red Lantern showing up in this, I'm going to change our Storm of Spoilers oath at the top to be more hate-fueled. It's going to be great. So guys, go out there, be excellent to each other, and I don't know, call your parents,
even if they're crazy.